This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. As chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, Carl Hulse has covered 8 presidential and 17 congressional elections. Hulse is also the author of the behind-the-scenes book On Washington and oversaw the development of First Draft, the Times' daily political email newsletter. He's also a 1976 graduate of Illinois State University. Carl Hulse, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Great. Glad to be here. Always fun to be back at ISU.
Let's talk about your employer first, the failing New York Times. Anything you'd like to say about that?
We are not failing. Now, that's an interesting thing. Donald Trump coined that as his attack line on us. The funnier thing is that we're actually succeeding. Subscriptions, digital subscriptions are way up, print even up. I mean, we're reaching more people than ever before. So we're not failing. Donald Trump has a sort of tortured relationship with the Times. He wants to be loved by the New York Times. He's just not there yet. So he kind of gets mad. And one thing I tell people, it's interesting. I've been at the Times for 30 years in some capacity or another, and we've always been under attack. I mean, it's a high-profile place. You're always hearing it from someone. The funny thing now is people come up to me and thank me and offer to bake me pies and stuff. So it's had kind of a weird reaction.
Well, isn't it interesting, though, that maybe that digital subscriptions are up and real subscriptions to the print version of the Times are up. And I think you're adding more staff as well because of Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, our office in Washington has, I think, over 100 people right now, which is the most it's ever had. Since I've been there since 1985. So, yeah, he's creating, isn't that the irony, right, that Donald Trump in his war with the media and specifically the New York Times is actually helping the media and the New York Times. I ran into an executive at the Washington Post the other day who said, Trump calls them the Amazon Washington Post because
Jeff Bezos. Right.
And but he goes, I think you guys do better with failing. I kind of wish he would call us failing.
So. it's a sort of a badge of honor, I suppose. Yeah. What about the things the president says? How do you decide to cover what he says? Are tweets news?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, tweets are news. This is a debate that I never really got. Because this is the president of the United States, right? And there's one person on Twitter who has taken the president's tweets and put them on White House letterhead as a statement from the president. So, I mean, you have to consider this tweet a statement from the president. In fact, we know more about this president's thinking and what's going on with him than we do previous ones because they wouldn't expose themselves like this. So, during the day, we keep a pretty close eye on it. And we've all pretty much come to the agreement. Yes, we cover almost every tweet. If it makes news, if it's just one of the dumber tweets or a commentary on some person or other, that might not be it. But when he starts tweeting about DACA or North Korea, certainly news.
What are you hearing from political and bureaucratic leaders on a regular basis in Washington? You're in Washington. What are they saying about this president privately?
if you could get them to go public, they're confused and concerned. But for different reasons. Some of the Republicans are concerned that he may turn out to be a Democrat in disguise and making some deals, so they're alarmed there. It's just the chaotic atmosphere, the inconsistency of the positions. I mean, look at DACA, the program for
immigrant children.
Yeah, who were brought here as children. And, he's been all over the place on this. So it's like, where's the consistency? What's he really want? What's he going to do? So there's some concern. I think that the main concern is North Korea, right? This is what people really look at. It's like, okay, here's a spot that has super severe global implications and for us. And, what are they actually going to do? And I think there's a lot of reliance on, say, General Mattis at the Defense Department or McMaster in National Security Advisor, that they're going to, keep things on, a maintainable level. But yeah, there's a lot of concern, and it's
so like, McMaster today was sort of smoothing over a tweet. I think it was yesterday where Trump, the president of the United States, was mocking the leader of North Korea, calling him Rocket Man.
Yeah. I saw that Rocket Man, Elton John. One of the first concerts I ever saw at ISU, by the way, was Elton John. And he sang Rocket Man. And it was sort of the first time
I heard it. We'll end with that song after the interview, okay?
Because so it seemed appropriate. Yeah, I mean, you just can't, in normal diplomacy, have these kind of...
What's normal anymore?
Well, what is normal? And, you know, I wrote a piece over the weekend about this bipartisanship that's going on in Washington right now. And the part of the problem is that people haven't even seen this kind of thing before. It's just so new. And John Cornyn is quoted in there saying, you know, this guy came in here to shake things up, and that's what he's doing. So people feel kind of shaken up in Washington, that's for sure.
And we'll get to some of the bipartisanship in just a moment, Chuck and Nancy and the president. There are those who think this president is doing harm to institutions, that he's changing the presidency, for instance, in a permanent way that's harmful to the office, maybe harmful to democracy. What would you tell those people?
I think in some ways it's cutting both ways, to tell you the truth. I know that's a political answer, but I think there is some things going on with institutions that are potentially harmful long term, including the presidency itself. I mean, the way he's operating as a president is different than any previous president has operated. And, you know, we'll have to see at the end whether he's degraded the office. Some people think he has degraded the office. The State Department, for instance, being hollowed out, you know, a big arm of the United States government that's been powerful for a long time is really suffering in this administration. They just don't want to do anything at the State Department.
Where is the president on all of the appointments that need to be made?
I mean, he's far behind. They've made some progress.
But much further behind than any other administration
and
in modern history.
And in the State Department, you know, there's whole floors over there that I'm told that, you know, there's just nobody working there, and people are leaving. So I think that personnel side of things is potentially bad, going to take years to change it back. Now, Donald Trump and his inner circle would say, well, you know what, we don't need all these jobs, and part of our approach is not to fill these jobs, so I'm purposefully not doing it. But I do think that that could change. Now, I have a weird take on this, though, in another way from other people in Washington. Congress has, over the previous presidencies, really become less powerful, and it's given away a lot of its power, and it's because members didn't want to make hard decisions, and they want to punt everything to the White House.
And it's incremental, and they don't get it back either.
No,
you
never get it back. Any power seized by a White House is only built upon by the next White House, and I think we're seeing Congress, to some degree, trying to get some of its power back. And I actually think, in some ways, that that's a good thing. And that our institutions are being challenged in a way that they haven't been before, but they're also standing up at least a little bit. Now, you know, we're very short time into this presidency, but I think that
it doesn't seem that way.
I know people think it's been going on forever.
Well, we're entering what, the eighth or ninth month?
Ninth month, the other day, I think. You know, we still have to see. I think there are some pretty serious long-term consequences from this presidency that we don't even know yet.
What concerns you most as a journalist with the president and this administration?
Well, I mean, and it's obviously there's a whole new approach to the media, right? And they're squeezing us in a way that is scary and bad. It's like, you know, there's a lot of refusal to participate. There is a lot of direct challenging, right? And, you know, trying to undermine us in a way that really hasn't happened before publicly. You know, fake news. We could talk about this for hours. And also restrictions on the press. There was this is a case people didn't really pay much attention to, but we did in Washington. Tom Price, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, was out in West Virginia during the healthcare debate and was confronted by a local reporter, I think it was a radio reporter, and had him arrested for kind of being too hostile and aggressive in his questioning. Now, that guy didn't do anything that we don't do every day on Capitol Hill, and that was kind of scary. It's like, you're going to take it to that length.
But has it had a chilling effect yet?
No.
Or is the media sort of pushing back harder?
Yeah, I think it's actually more the other way, that it probably makes us more aggressive. And maybe some, you know, we do push it, right? And, you know, reporters can be obnoxious. Trust me, I've been one for a long time. But there's just a lack of respect for the media that I think we haven't seen before. And some of it's truly unwarranted, and that they're just trying to undermine the criticism. But, you know, Trump, from my perspective, wants nothing more to be loved by the media, and he's not, and it really upsets him.
WGLT even gets it now. Stories as legit as any other on our website, or those posted to our Facebook page, are called out as fake by people who don't agree with the story. What kind of damage do you think is being done by this constant drumbeat of the person occupying the highest office in the nation calling the news he watches faithfully or the news he reads faithfully fake?
Yeah, I think it's bad, and we're going to be years recovering from this. And it's not what they're calling fake news is just news they don't like. You know, there is such a thing as fake news, and you know the Russians. It's a different thing. This was things that people knowingly put up that was fake, but. You know, this isn't fake news, and we're taking steps. We're trying to do a lot of things to push back. You know, we're much more transparent now in our reporting, and, you know, we'll post the actual documents online to back up a story, and we tell the story about how we actually got the story. We're not publishing fake news.
And God forbid you make a mistake, too, because then it's portrayed as permanent, and the retraction is never talked about.
Right, and this is a big thing with me, too. The media's got a big responsibility in this environment. We have to do our job better than we've ever done it before. We have to be super certain and confident about what we're writing, because if you give anyone an opening, they will seize on it, the administration.
And capitalize on it
If there's any flaw whatsoever, that doesn't really undermine the whole story, but they'll use it that way. So it's a tough time for us. But, you know, it's always good to be challenged, and hopefully we'll rise to the occasion.
That's Carl Hulse, ISU graduate and chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is Sound Ideas. Let's talk about Chuck and Nancy and the president and the debt ceiling and the stopgap spending deal. Of course, we're talking about Chuck Schumer, Democratic leader of the Senate, Nancy Pelosi, Democratic House leader. Is there a deal with the spending limits?
Yeah, there's some deals, and then there's some not deals. But Chuck and Nancy, I mean, that was the great new.
And we spell that now with no spaces,
yeah, it's
right?
It's just all one word, chuckandnancy.com, right? And, you know, so they went in and cooked up this deal with Trump in the White House a week or so ago. Now, this is interesting because Chuck Schumer's a New Yorker, another outer borough guy, Brooklyn, you know, Donald Trump, another outer borough guy. Queens, and they can relate. He actually likes talking to Chuck and Nancy. You know, he's donated money to both of them. You know, they're sort of East Coast people. I think that he doesn't have this personal connection with Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, or Paul Ryan, the House Speaker. So I think Donald Trump likes to sit down and cut deals with them. Now, this first deal they got last week, it held off a crisis, you know, the government would, right? If it hadn't been for that, we'd be talking right now about, oh, the government's going to shut down. In a week. And now we're not doing that. Instead, we'll be talking about that in December.
Right. It just kicked the can down the road.
But they've gave them some time to make a deal. Now, Mitch McConnell, in one of the stories that I did, said, hey, this deal isn't as great as Chuck and Nancy think it is. I did a little maneuvering myself.
Yeah, you interviewed Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and it was the subject of the Times New Washington podcast. McConnell has a different take on the deal and whether the deal is actually going to hang together.
Right. So the Democrats wanted the government's funding and the debt limit to all expire simultaneously because that gives them the utmost leverage in this because Republicans don't want to vote for a debt limit increase because Tea Party folks come after and beat them up for that. So they don't want to do that. So you need Democratic votes to get this through, and the Democrats wanted this all tied together so they could have real negotiating power in December. McConnell, as he said, wrote the bill. He said, one of the advantages of being the majority leader is I control the paper. And so he did the bill in a way that didn't give the Democrats what they wanted, and he's now saying, well, that debt limit's down the road, so maybe the Democrats don't have the negotiating power. I mean, you know, it's a little bit of face-saving on both sides, and it just makes it harder. But then the other deal was on DACA again.
Yeah, so is there a deal with DACA?
I mean, there's a deal to make a deal.
Okay.
And this is what Mitch McConnell and some of the other Republicans—
And we don't know if there's a wall or not.
Yes, and that the wall is not part of that agreement to somehow put DACA into law. But, you know, Mitch McConnell early on this year told me when Trump was first in and things were really chaotic and Washington, and I went and saw the majority leader. I said, are you worried? Are you going to intervene? He goes, no, I'm actually happy because I was worried Trump might be a Democrat because he has been in the past.
So
Does Trump care about party politics, or is it more about the personality of the person that he wants to talk with or make a deal with?
I think it's more about the news coverage of whatever deal he gets.
Oh, it's just about how he makes him look.
Yes, I think
it's ego driven.
And can he get a win? Because the morning after the debt limit deal, I started looking at the media coverage, and this is early in the morning, and I was just like, Trump is going to love this coverage. All the headlines are great for him. Trump reaches across the aisle was the headline in the Washington Post, big two-column headline. We had a good coverage of it. You know, Trump makes deal. And I said, he's going to want to do more of this. And then, as it turns out, I did interview Chuck Schumer, too, had gone over a second time after making that deal. And then also talked to Trump on the phone. Trump called him in the morning and was just like, you know, in the clouds over. He says, hey, Chuck, did you see this news coverage? You know, we're getting great coverage here. This is great. That was what was driving him on this. And, you know, if he continues to get good coverage, he'll try and make more deals.
And Chuck probably only cares as much as the president cares in terms of what it allows Chuck to do.
Yeah. And he was bemused by it,
sure.
You know. But I think that, you know, there's still a lot of partisanship, but I do think that there's some opportunities here that maybe we didn't think existed earlier.
So he may not be intentional, but Trump is shaking things up.
Yes.
He is presenting himself as a deal maker.
Right, because that's what he wants to be, the art of the deal.
Sure. So President Trump is as unconventional as he is unpredictable. Will we see more bipartisanship like this, do you think?
I think on certain things, right? But there's still, as Mitch McConnell said again in that podcast, well, the president still agrees with us more than he agrees with the Democrats. I liked the way that he framed this. Mitch McConnell said to me, he said, well, there's nothing inherently wrong about working with Democrats.
Right, but McConnell and Trump don't like each other, do they?
I think that they're having a hard time. But Mitch McConnell wants to get a whole bunch of Republican-nominated judges on the federal bench. Mm. And he wants to do some other things, long-term tax cuts. Mitch McConnell's, the name of his memoir, the title was The Long Game. Mitch McConnell plays a long game, and he's going to do what he needs to do.
And the president will be right on board with appointing federal judges.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one more box he can check that says, look, I'm doing something.
And that is what the kind of thing that parts of his base, they don't care what he does as long as he puts in a bunch of conservative judges. He's got 140 openings right now, I think. That's a lot of judges.
You said you've used the word chaos or chaotic a couple of times. You said just a moment ago that things aren't as chaotic as they were. What about Trump's unpredictability or reliability that leads to chaos? What effect is that having in Washington as the administration enters its eighth or ninth month?
Yeah, I mean, people just don't know what to expect on a day-to-day, almost hour-to-hour basis, right? You know, we kind of approach things, okay, here's our day, here's the stories we're covering, and then about an hour into it, or maybe even an hour before that, something erupts. So people, and I just hear this from everybody, people don't know what to expect from the government, and that's an unusual thing. Now, the market so far, the stock market has so far kind of been okay with this, which has been surprising to us. And in one way, you know, Trump looks at that as a big indicator if he can keep the market up and growing. But, you know, at some point, chaos takes a toll. And we're just not to that point yet. But, you know, a big international crisis would probably do that. You know, honestly, on the hurricanes, the hurricanes seem to have handled pretty well. We haven't heard horror stories. And two, the hurricanes, and I wrote this piece, changed the fiscal dynamic.
Sure, it allowed the debt ceiling deal to get done.
Because natural disasters, as they should be, are sort of a license to spend money. So once you have the ability, okay, we're going to spend and we have a good reason for it, it kind of makes a few other things easier. So they got out of some trouble a little bit due to those hurricanes.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy in the studio with Carl Hulse, chief Washington correspondent with the New York Times. Every time a subpoena is issued by Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, or every time someone testifies, everyone tries to make sense of what Robert Mueller and his team are focusing on or what they're actually trying to do. What do you make of the fact that the spokesperson for former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort has now testified?
I mean, so this, let's go to the fake news, because this is, the administration and the president have continued to say this is fake news. Well, guess what? This is the opposite of fake news. Bob Mueller is a serious person. He has a major investigation going on and a grand jury.
How major? Can you characterize it for
us? I mean, it's big. It's like he's got, you know, these high-powered attorneys who were making big money on the outside.
A superstar team.
Right, who used to be at the Justice Department.
Bigger than Whitewater?
Oh, yeah, I do actually think in some ways bigger than Whitewater, because Clinton was actually ended up being impeached for something that just came up and had nothing to do with it. But yeah, I mean, I think the potential is there. And I think that this is why you see Trump and his people saying, you can't investigate beyond the campaign. You can't look at our real estate. Because I think that, to me, says, well, they know there's some stuff in that real estate, which we think some of it was involved with reaching out to Russians or people connected to Russia. So, yeah, this is, you know, these are prosecutors. I told somebody, prosecutors tend to prosecute. And so I expect something to come out of this.
Then the early morning raid on Manafort's home. I mean, all of you can't get a search warrant unless there's some smoke, right?
Yeah, no, there's real things going on here. And it's not just the Mueller. I mean, the Senate Intelligence Committee investigating the much more so the actual Russian activity in our election. I know the people on that committee. They say there's a lot of serious stuff there and they're going to have a big report. So, you know, this is worrisome,
sure.
I think, to the administration, because they know at some point that they could have some people in real trouble. They're all having to spend on attorneys. The president, you know, we had the story last week about his dressing down of Jeff Sessions for recusing himself, because in Trump's mind, that's the whole problem. Sessions failed to stop Mueller and a special prosecutor, and he holds him in contempt for that.
And he can't fire Mueller now. He's trapped. You said Mueller's a serious guy. He's going to go where this investigation takes him, no matter where it goes.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the special counsel law, even though it's somewhat binding compared to some of the old independent prosecutor laws, I mean, they're not going to say, this is a crime or this is some misbehavior that's outside our scope. No, they're not going to stop there.
And what sort of charge does it take for the president to be, you know, sort of hamstrung or crippled by this?
I mean, I don't think it would take much.
Obstruction?
Yeah, something like that. It all depends how it plays out. You could have people like Manafort or other people who Flynn, you know, who's got the old Michael Flynn.
Who maybe flip.
The initial national security advisor who were, you know, doing things that maybe weren't directly tied to the president or the president had no knowledge of them. I mean, you're going to have, but I think that there is going to be some sort of activity on these people, and it may be sooner rather than later. We don't know exactly what the timing is.
Would a Republican Congress, a Republican House impeach the president?
Maybe if he kept making deals with the Democrats. I don't see that, honestly.
All right. Carl Hulse, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas. We appreciate it.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Carl Hulse is the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. This is GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.